I'm here with Mr. Ray S. Gray. The date is 27 August 1987, and we are in Victoria.
Victoria, on the 11th of March 1912.
And was there a family history of military service?
None.
None at all? You were the first? Then when did you become interested?
Well, I joined the Scottish in about January 39, but I was in the Army Service Corps Reserve for about a couple of years before that.
What did that entail? What were your duties? And
well, it was militia, of course, and we were learning to drive trucks and motorcycles and, well, general military stuff like going out in the ranges and camping and all that sort of thing.
And you were stationed here in Victoria?
Yeah, right.
Whereabouts?
Well, it worked out of the armories.
Okay, and then why did you join the Canadian Scottish in 39?
My brother-in-law was an officer and had been for quite some time, and he persuaded me to join at that time, especially as there was a trip to Seattle coming up for the unit, and also the King and Queen were coming in. Got a picture of them when I was on a guard of honor down there. That spring, I can't tell you the date.
Okay. And you joined as a private?
Yep.
And how was life as a private?
Well, it was no great hardship because we only, worked camp during the summer. Actually, there was only one summer, and the rest of the time it was just a matter of one or two evenings a week. That summer we went to Vernon Camp on for 10 days, I guess, which was pretty cushy because we went over on a destroyer and had breakfast at the Vancouver Hotel, and then went up by train and spent a week or 10 days at the Vernon Camp.
And what sort of training did you receive?
Oh, we were doing infantry training in kilts and whatnot, so we were crawling over the hills around Vernon, which had sort of low cactus, which made it rather difficult, and there was always a talk anyway of watching out for rattlesnakes, and I never saw anyone. And it was so hot up there that when we marched out anywhere, the blacktop was so hot and gooey that your feet stuck to it, so everybody had blisters like crazy.
How well were you equipped?
You mean
the militia?
Well, had everything we needed.
In the way of vehicles and...
Yeah, lots of vehicles. And our uniforms were provided. As a private, I didn't have to put any money out for any fancy things like the officers probably did.
Were they new uniforms or were they from the First World War?
I don't know how old they were. They were the regular issue at that time. And I don't think they were that old.
Okay. And where were you when the war started?
Well, I was working in the office, in the land registry office, and the law courts, and we figured something was going to happen, and I went out for lunch and went up to a building at the corner of Broad and Fort Street, opposite where McGillinorm now is, which was the Times building where the newspaper was published, and they used to, during the day, put bulletins up on the board. There was one up there that said, "All members of the Canadian Scottish Regiment report to the armies by 1600 hours. I went back down to the office and told the boss I was leaving. I picked up all the work I had on my desk and dumped it on somebody else's desk and said, "There, that's your baby," and that was it.
Okay, tell me about that first day. What happened when you went to the armory?
We went down there and we all... Have you been to the armory? You know what it looks like? Yeah. Okay, we had our orderly room down on the lower floor, and we bedded down on whatever they could find in the way of blankets and sleeping bags, that sort of stuff, up at the, along around the upper level there, and nobody knew what the hell was going on, but they had an office, an orderly room, and was a lot of taking of names and history and all that sort of stuff. And at that time we were supposed not to go further than bugle call distance from the armory, which is sort of stupid. It didn't stop me going home occasionally. And, well, each day something new, trying to teach people this, that, and the other thing. It wasn't very long before they found out that I'd worked in an office, so I got snagged for an orderly room corporal's job. So from there on, for a while I was orderly room corporal of B Company. And it was a matter of new people coming in all the time. We'd send them for their medicals and fill out, umpteen forms and send them off to, they go through the orderly room to water, and most of them would come back because they weren't filled out right. And so there was a heck of a lot of, backing and filling and a lot of detail.
Was there a big rush of new people coming in?
Well, I won't say it was a rush. It was fairly steady.
And did this cause a problem, the difference in training between the people who were already in the militia and the new people that came? Did they have to catch up?
I don't think so, because when you were in the militia, you were sort of told that one day, if there was a war, it would be your job to help integrate the new people coming in, train them, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So we went for the odd route march and that sort of thing.
Any other training that you did?
We had rifle practice on a range in the armory. I don't know if it's still there or not. I used to shoot on that. And we'd go out, before that even, we went out to Heels Range and did quite a bit of training out there. So we knew a few things.
And how long did you stay in Victoria?
We moved out to Otter Point. I can't remember when. I'd be guessing it about October. And so we set up, camp there. And from there, we sent detachments to Mary Hill, for instance, and Albert Head, and several other places. And we were responsible for the administration for them. We'd be sending new people out and having them come back, and a lot of routine stuff. Still having people coming in. While we were out there, we had an NCO's course. I went on that, and up to that time I was an orderly room corporal, and with not too much of the outside stuff, but I had the full course for corporal for any other part of the regiment, so I got qualified there.
What sort of course was it? What did you learn? What were you tested on?
A bit of everything, and drill. Mm-hmm. Compass reading, map reading, and trained to teach other people, because we were still just the nucleus of what was to come.
What was the pay difference between a corporal and a private?
I think it started out either $1.10 or $1.20 a day. I think it was $1.10 for a private and $1.20 for a lance corporal. And went up to about $1.30 for sergeant and whatnot. And then we moved in from Otter Point to Macaulay Point. And we marched all the way in from Otter Point in 2 days. Bivouacked in the bush for one night. And not too long after that, I went on a small arms course to Sarcee, just outside Calgary. That was about a two or three weeks course. Training in all form of small arms with the idea that I would be an instructor. I mean, everybody who went there was potential instructor for the future. And then when we got back, we did a lot of the training and that sort of thing. So, got into the Army proper. Beginning of September 1939. I was married the end of October 1939. And then, I guess it was the next October, November, we moved to DeBert.
In Nova Scotia?
Yeah.
What were conditions like there?
The only time I'd been on a train before was the trip up to Vernon in 19 to go to summer camp. And so then we went across Canada, and the day we left, and the whole battalion marched down to the ship, and half of Victoria was out to see us, and I got the dirty job of being battalion orderly sergeant. Oh, I'd been promoted to sergeant in the meantime. And that meant you're responsible for the whole regiment for that day, getting everybody sorted out on the train. Oh, a good number of them, fairly drunk and whatnot, all saying goodbye to friends and relatives. And, you know, many of them didn't ever see them again, you know. Yeah, we went to DeBert. We got off the train several miles from the camp, and it was raining, and we had a march, and most of us were too, well, we'll say lazy, or it was going to be inconvenient to unpack our ground sheets, which are good for rain. We thought, well, when we got to camp, and have a shower and be all right. So we got to camp, and the buildings didn't even have doors and windows on. There was no water except what they brought in barrels and whatnot for cooking. During the next few days, we found an opportunity to go into Truro, which was 12 miles away. And usually you had to hire a taxi. I've seen 12 people in a taxi, you know, and just loaded on. The taxi drivers would charge everybody full fare, you know. And you go into a hotel and find a place where you get a shower and whatnot, and that was it. Oh, yeah, and when we got to the camp, just about everybody got measles. My wife went down to Truro, the 11th of November, Armistice Day. And as she arrived, everybody was coming down with scarlet fever. I got measles and got over that, and I got scarlet fever and got over that. And what you might call a hospital was an Ithan hut with no water again. The only way we got water to wash with was by breaking the icicles off the gutters and melting them on pot bellied stove. I mean, there was water for drinking and food and whatnot. It wasn't like you expect to be when you go into a hospital.
What sort of training did you receive while in DeBert?
Well, again, we'd go on maneuvers. We had cross-country skiing, and we went on the ranges down the Bay of Fundy. They've seen us down there at 30 below, firing at the butts. You're lucky if you hit the butts, much less the targets. It wasn't the greatest life. And get into Truro now and again. My wife had a room in Truro. And it meant usually catching some sort of vehicle. There was a, what we call sort of cattle cars and whatnot. And we get right back about 5:30 in the morning. And then, that would be November. And the next spring, they arranged to take a holiday. I'd applied for my commission in the meantime. Mm-hmm. I wanted to take a holiday and drive around, rent a car and drive around Nova Scotia. We got down to Halifax and got a call from the regiment. I'd already been there saying that I had to move to Brockville to go on after his training course. So we never got that trip. Came back and went up by train to Brockville. My wife came up, but she kept on going to Victoria because there was not much accommodation in Brockville. We were there for 3 months.
Was it intense training?
Yeah, quite. So we did a lot of the training ourselves because some of the instructors had just come out of school and hadn't had any, and they found out that, you know, maybe I was a sergeant who had a couple of years' experience, so I found myself, like all the other fellows did from our unit, training the new people. Well, we got through that 3 month session. That was May, June, and July. Was it ever hot down there? They did a lot of experiments with us. They, instead of, when you go on route march, instead of having a drink of water or anything like that, you had to take salt tablets, and this was the idea. This was going to satisfy you and whatnot, but people who made a mint out of that were the kids who came along, bottles of Coke and whatnot, and sold them as exorbitant. So after 3 months, we were to be distributed around Canada to, we passed our first lieutenant's part. We were to go to different training bases, advanced training bases. And I was slated to go to somewhere in New Brunswick, I think it was. And I got all packed and ready, went down to the orderly room that day to pick up the tickets and found they were for Calgary, which suited me fine because it was starting to come home. So we started across the continent. And I was with a chap, Tony Staples, and whether you run into his name, tell. We'd been together for quite a while there, and he was only since died because he was badly wounded in Italy. So we came across with very little money in our pockets, and we sent a wire ahead to the adjutant in Calgary saying that we hadn't had any leave for a long time. We knew the course wasn't actually starting for a couple of weeks, couldn't we go on home and whatnot and report back? So we got the word that we could, so we continued on to Victoria. I had to wire ahead my wife to send some money somewhere because we didn't have enough to eat. I mean, the food wasn't provided once we got to Calgary. We were on our own, man. Got back home and spent about 10 days here, and then went back to Calgary, greeted by the major who was in charge of the course, saying, why didn't you tell me where you were going? The course doesn't start for another couple of weeks yet. We could have told you not to come back. So we talked him into forgetting he'd ever said that, and we beat it again. Went home again. And then, do you want me to carry on like that?
Yeah. Talk about the course at Calgary.
Of course, at Calgary, it was all getting more organized. A lot of training with weapons, small arms. A lot of drill. A lot of instruction as to how to instruct and all that sort of thing. And we were, pretty well freelancing, and I didn't have a spot that I could say was my job. And one day the Inspector General from Ottawa came to visit Curry Barracks. That's where it was we were. And I was called into the orderly room and said, okay, you're to take such and such a platoon. You're in charge of it for this big parade and that. So I whistled them out. I'd never seen them before. They'd never seen me before. And everybody's lined up, and the Inspector General comes down the ranks, and if you're in charge of a platoon or anybody, man, you're supposed to know everything about them, every last thing about them. So he stopped in front of one man and turned to me and said, how are this man's teeth? So I said, I haven't the foggiest idea, sir. He said, how long have you had this platoon? So I said, about 20 minutes, sir. He turned on his heel and went off. I don't think there's a great deal to tell about that. It was just training and waiting. We got our second pip at that time, and it was waiting to go somewhere.
What time is this?
I sort of lost track of when they went and whatnot. Well, I'm sure they had, And then they were sending troops to Hong Kong, and they called for volunteers to go with the units that were going to Hong Kong. And we all wanted to get track and do something, so we all volunteered. But I and a bunch of others were turned down because we had already, our names were already on the draft for overseas. That saved our lives, I think.
Sure did.
So eventually they said, okay, you know, you're going to leave soon. You have 2 weeks vacation or something like that. And we were allowed to go home at our expense. And every time you move cases like that, it's money. And the pay, I don't know what we were getting paid at that time. No idea, but it sure as hell wasn't much. So I went home a couple of weeks here, back to Calgary, and then by train. Oh, yeah, okay. There were about six of us, officers, were sent up to Red Deer to pick up a whole trainload of troops who were going overseas. They were all pretty well private soldiers. And for the purpose of the trip, various fellows were picked out and said, you're acting sergeant or acting corporal and whatnot for the trip. Whether they got paid or not, I haven't any idea, but they have the authority. Otherwise, you can't handle a bunch of men like that. So we headed across Canada. One or two stops for to our rope matches and that sort of stuff. One of them was in Quebec City. We marched all through Quebec, and all the French Canadians who didn't approve of this sort of thing stood on the sidewalk and glared at us and whatnot. It wasn't a very friendly situation. And we eventually landed up at Halifax, and we were there for a matter of a few hours, and we were loaded aboard a ship. It was a ship that was part of the spoils from the First World War. It had been sitting in, tied up somewhere down in the States all that time, so it wasn't in very good shape. They loaded us all on there, and we went up Bedford Basin, and the boilers blew, and they tried it more again, and the whole idea there was to get the ship across to the Clyde and get it fixed up, but eventually they could see that it wasn't going to make it. And all the time there were ships being sunk out off Halifax, the subs were all over the place out there. They took us all off and sent the troops all off to different areas in eastern Canada, various camps and whatnot. But the six of us, they left in Halifax. They put us on Pullman cars, we lived there. Nothing to do except eat. They would go to the Nova Scotian hotel, meals, dead of winter, and snow everywhere. The most unfriendly situation. We were there for 6 weeks, and eventually they put us aboard without our troops, so we didn't have any more responsibility. And the ship called the Cameronia. We went over. The sea was beautiful, not rough at all. We were playing deck tennis outside half the time.
What were conditions like aboard? Was it very crowded?
It was crowded, but it was adequate room. Meals were good. There were a few scares. We had to do a lot of zigzagging, that sort of stuff, to avoid subs. And we got to Gourock, just outside Glasgow. Put us on trains. Went down to Aldershot.
What was your first impression of Aldershot?
Well, it was a old established barracks. We didn't have too much to do with it. It was just a matter of waiting there till you got your name came up to go to the unit. I'd only been there 2 or 3 days, and I went down and visited the unit, which was at Horsham at the time. And Den Park was the name of the place. Big, beautiful estate. And went back, and it wasn't too long before I got orders to move there, and I did that. Got there in the middle of the morning, and immediately told them that I was to command this particular platoon, and that night we were going on a scheme, on a night exercise. And here I didn't know a soul in my platoon, didn't know the routines, just didn't know anything. Over there, as you realize, you don't have lights on vehicles or anything like that. You drive in blackout. And I was in charge of getting my platoon by vehicle to, from, you know, the camp where we were out to a certain spot. And I got up and we started off, and I wasn't used to any of this driving with no lights at all. I hadn't gone very far. And I told the driver to stop, and I got out and got in the back and told my sergeant to get up front. He'd been there, he knew what he was doing. We got there, we survived, but it was quite an experience. And I've lost our track of the timing.
Mm-hmm. Quite a while ago.
Yeah. And of course we moved about England to southern England to different spots. We
defending the coast.
Yeah. We took over. First Division, who was defending the coast, would want to go on exercises, and they'd pull them out and send us in to take over from them. And one time I was sent down as an advance party to a French Canadian outfit, and of course I didn't understand what the hell they were talking about, because they all spoke French. And I remember being with them for two or three days and being in the mess, you know, having meals, and gabble, you didn't know what anybody else was talking about. I remember one night we had sentries posted all along the area, and I had to go out several times during the night and visit the sentries, and of course it's inky black, and down there are a lot of hedges. You'd be walking along paths with hedges on either side. It was a real scary feeling. Several times I went along there and revolver out, ready to shoot anybody who's stuck her head around anywhere, and it was dangerous as hell to go anywhere near the sentries. They didn't know, you know, until they could get a password from me and get close enough that I was friendly and they didn't have to shoot. So we survived, and of course there were various opportunities to go on leave.
Tell me about leave.
First leave we went. Well, you got a pass on the train. Mm-hmm. So the idea was, when you got a pass on the train, you go as far as you could, sort of idea. So this Tony Staple that he and I went together, we went up to Edinburgh. And at Edinburgh, the parent organization was the Royal Scots. There was the Royal Scots Club there. We could go there and stay there. It was very, very nice. We had to pay our way, but I mean, all the comforts of home, good meals and that sort of stuff. And we visited around various areas. And then I know on that leave we came back to London and spent several days there. Made quite a few contacts. And the next leave I went to Torquay. You haven't been over to England, anything like that? So you don't know where I'm talking about, but it's one of the very southern towns in Devon, which has palm trees and that sort of stuff. It's almost tropical, and lovely beaches, and stayed down there for a week. Well, this was all interspersed with different parades and exercises, and on several occasions I became intelligence officer about that time. A lot to do with brigade, and when the brigade staff had to go on vacation or anything like that, you know, we'd take over from them. So eventually I became adjutant and stayed adjutant all through the D-Day landings. Of course, the winter before D-Day we spent on the Isle of Wight. Mm-hmm.
In preparation for it?
Right. Prior to that we were in Portsmouth, which is a British garrison. Then we went to the Isle of Wight. There we did a lot of assault landing training, you know, in the actual craft that we would eventually be in.
How much do you think that helped for the actual invasion, those exercises and that training?
Well, they certainly helped a lot of people. I mean, the idea when a landing craft was, you go in and you hit the beach and the ramp goes down, you go off, but As it turned out, with us, we couldn't get into the beach because there were these big obstacles, like a scaffolding they put around buildings and iron. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get in except in just various places. But so we would go aboard a ship bigger than the Marguerite and spend a day or two on there and do our landings in the landing craft just as the way we were going to do it eventually. We'd be out for the same time that we were going to take to cross the channel. And it was, you know, facsimile of things to come. And eventually we moved from the Isle of Wight to a holding area north of Southampton.
How long were you there for?
I can't remember. Quite a few weeks.
And there was
maybe several months.
How did the men occupy their time? What was there to do?
Well, you could still go on leave from there. And there was a lot of getting outfitted with the type of equipment that we had when we were in D-Day. By that time, we came under the Americans. Prior to going under the Americans, the equipment that we had was not as up to date as it was once we went under the Americans. Once we went under, you know, Eisenhower, you had your pick of whatever you wanted. So much equipment that people would, you know, the fellows were tempted to take too much and wish to hell they didn't have it, you know? And we could never get white bread prior to going under the Americans, going under the Americans and the war prep, you know? And my job once we were there was, I was pretty damn busy because it was a matter of making sure that everybody was allocated to a particular landing craft. Mm-hmm. And there was no fooling around. If there was anybody who went sick, they had to be changed. Everybody had to know their exact spot. And the administration was the busiest part of the whole thing. I mean, there was training that was going on, but there was nothing new because by that time it was too late to introduce anything new. And time went on, all of a sudden everything was clamped down, nobody could go out, nobody could, well, reinforcements could come in, but anybody who got sick was sort of taken care of there, so there was no contact as far as possible with the civilian population or with anybody else. And